Hey everyone, J.R. Radcliffe, host of the Milwaukee Brewers Journal Sentinel podcast. Real quick, wanted to note this podcast arrives Monday morning, and as of Monday morning, we did not know how many, or should say which players were in the pool of 60 that the Milwaukee Brewers would be choosing from. Of course, we talk about it on this podcast, the 30-man roster that's going to start the season, the taxi squad. There's a lot of different designations to go, and we recorded this a couple days before Monday, trying to work around some schedules, so we didn't have a lot of the information on the roster then. Should find out later Monday who's in the player pool, but as of right now, we do not know who those guys are, so you may know that by the time you're listening to this, but just consider that as we talk a little bit about roster machinations for the Brewers this season. Here we go. Let's talk some Brewers baseball. The Milwaukee Journal Sentinel Milwaukee Brewers podcast joining you again. It's a new week, spring training or whatever we're calling this, summer camp, spring training 2.0, whatever you want to say, is within a week now, and Brewers will be reporting to Miller Park, getting tested for COVID-19, and then away we go toward what we hope is a full or a abbreviated full 60-game Major League Baseball season. My name is J.R. Radcliffe, host of the Brewers podcast, and on the other line, as always, is Tom Haudricourt, Milwaukee Brewers beat reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Wanted to take a look at the Brewers specifically as these new rules roll in, how that might impact the team, and sort of revisit some of the storylines that we were talking about when baseball was suspended back in March. Tom, how are things going? We kind of have a somewhat clearer picture of how spring training is going to work, how getting back to baseball is going to work. So there were a few revelations this week. What were some of the things that have jumped out at you thus far?
Well, they're going to graduate into actually doing baseball stuff again. Players are going to come in sort of in waves. I believe pitchers and catchers are expected in first, although I know some position players are, you know, coming in too. But, yeah, they're going to have very extensive COVID testing and also the usual physicals that you would have at the start of spring training. You know, they've been away 3 months, JR. So the physicals they took, you know, back in mid-February, they wanted to make sure these guys are still okay because they've all been on their own for 3 months now. But extremely intensive and comprehensive COVID, not just testing, JR, but also COVID education. These guys are each being given a 101-page manual, operations manual for the season. I was reading it today, and I started glossing through it. I mean, it's just unbelievable, you know. And so their lives are about to change in a big way, and they don't want anything to fall through the cracks, they being Major League Baseball and the Brewers. So these guys are going to be learning a new way of doing a season on and off the field starting this week. And then July 4th is the first scheduled full workout. But even that, according to Craig Counsell, is going to be two separate workouts because they're inviting 45 guys to camp to try out for 30 positions. We're going to open the season with 30 man rosters, then be shrunk to 28 and 26 over a month's time. So they're inviting 45 people to camp. So they're going to have two workouts a day because you got to have social distancing. You know, this is where, JR, they're going to realize how great they had it facility-wise down in Maryvale, down in Phoenix at American Family Fields of Phoenix, because I don't know, I'm going to just guess it's at least seven fields down there. And plus incredible medical and training facilities, too. And a clubhouse that you could play World Cup soccer in. It's just humongous. And so instead they're going to go to Miller Park where they have one field. You know, I don't think Health Fair Field is going to help them too much unless they're going to field a Little League team as well this year. And then at some point, they're going to form a 30-man taxi squad with the 15 guys that don't make their club, adding 15 more. And then those guys are going to go to what I'm going to start calling Camp Appleton. Every team has to have a secondary, what they're sort of calling a taxi squad, because there's no minor leagues this year, even though they haven't announced that. It's evident there's no minor leagues this year. So you got to have a reservoir somewhere of players to call up if someone gets hurt or isn't playing well. They'll still have transactions like any other season with players coming up and down, injured players being replaced, so on and so forth. So, you know, normally you would just call them up from AAA, but there won't be any AAA. So they're going to set up Camp Appleton where the Timber Rattlers, their Class A affiliate, would be playing, and hold a secondary camp there. And that, you know, JR, they're going to have to be creative with those guys, because that's going to get boring working out every day and have to no games to play, except maybe they'll play against each other, you know, but just hoping to be called up at some point. But another thing they're going to do there, and all teams are going to do, because there are no minor leagues this year and everybody's going to lose a year of player development, they're going to call up, they're going to take some of their top minor league prospects, guys like their number one pick last year, Ethan Small, and the shortstop they drafted number one a couple years ago, Bryce Terang, and maybe even a player or two from this year's draft, and they're going to include them in that group of 30 players so they can work out and get instruction and not have a wasted year. So I don't think there's media access to that camp, because it's kind of off the radar a little bit. But that's going to be fascinating what's going on there as well.
Totally surreal to imagine. And that's almost like a good subject for a movie called The Taxi Squad. Like, what are they going to be doing for this 60-game, this stretch of time, where they're, you know, working out, like you said, there really aren't enough people to even play against each other. They're sort of hoping to be called up. In a way, they're competing with each other
yes.
to get an opportunity to play with the big league team. But nobody around... potentially, I mean, like I said, it would be a great story if you could just embed a media person with them, but I'm sure that's going to be off limits. So just a very strange environment, like you said. That's at, again, Neuroscience Group Field at Fox City Stadium, which is a mouthful. So Camp Appleton works perfectly for me.
And they have to live in the coronavirus bubble too. So anybody expecting to see like Bryce Terang out at a bar in Grand Chute, I wouldn't bet on that.
Nobody's shopping at Fox City Mall, or Fox, is it Fox River Mall right next door? I think it is, yes. Nobody will be out there shopping from the taxi squad, but yeah, just a wild. Can you try to paint, or at least what picture is in your head of what these spring training events look like? I mean, are they playing games? Are they, I mean, you'd mentioned off mic that there might be meetings in the concourses between, you know, maybe position groups or whatever, because they just kind of have to fan out. They don't have the different fields, like you said, the different spaces where they can convene and really talk. It's not safe to be in small rooms with big groups of people. Right. So like they're going to use the whole stadium. It's going to be very strange inside Miller Park.
Yeah, I think Bernie Slide is going to be off limits. I don't think they want anybody doing that.
Yeah, right. People are going to go down that slide.
But wouldn't that be great? But they're going to try to use everything else that they can there. You know, like you just said, concourses to hold meetings, because they'd rather be in open air. You know, they're going to do all the things that us regular humans have been trying to do to avoid getting the coronavirus. But also try to play Major League Baseball at the same time. Each team is allowed to schedule three exhibition games against other major league teams if they're within driving distance. And guess what? There's two teams within driving distance of Milwaukee, and they both play in Chicago. And right. I just wonder, you know, they could the Cubs and the White Sox could come up together, and we could have like a little round robin tournament one weekend. And so let's see if that happens. Otherwise, it's going to be a lot of intra-squad action, a lot of live BP, a lot of simulated stuff. It's going to be mostly about, you know, getting the pitchers ready, because they're the ones that usually need longer camps. Craig Counsell said, you know, and he's been checking in regularly with his players, especially in the last couple of weeks, with hopes of getting out there. They've ramped up their communications. He said he is pleasantly surprised upon talking to pitchers and his pitching coaches at how far advanced some of these pitchers are for guys who've been working out on their own. You know, Brent Suter told me a couple of weeks ago, he's been throwing into a sofa cushion back home, So I don't know if he painted a strike zone on there or what, but if that was a good sofa, his wife's probably happy that he's gone now so she can like put the cushion back on. And then Brandon Woodruff and Josh Lindblom had come up to Milwaukee earlier, and they were throwing to local hitters, including Gavin Lux, I understand, the prospect out of Kenosha, who's very highly touted. They've been throwing hitters at that Hitters Academy facility, I believe. That's,
right.
Where is that, in Kenosha or Racine?
Yeah. Jared Kelenic's come out of there as well.
Yeah.
Lux is a Rookie of the Year candidate, really, with the Dodgers.
Yeah, so that's been more intense because there's actually been like real, hitters standing in against them and taking swings. And those pitchers, even if the hitter's just standing in the box and not even swinging, they just like the optics of having them in there to throw strikes to them and work them inside, outside, up and down. Just see how their stuff's playing. So those guys are already up to 90 pitches. And that's kind of where you would be at the end of a regular camp, because then your next step forward would be to get to 100 pitches. And that's sort of all they're going to let you throw in a major league season, So Craig Counsell said he was very pleasantly surprised to learn what a good job these pitchers have been doing on their own, throwing bullpens with whatever facilities they were able to use. And so he hopes the 3 weeks is going to be plenty to get them ready to go. And he did reveal to us yesterday being Friday, as we tape this on Saturday, that of the 30 players that they're allowed to start the season with, he envisions more pitchers than hitters, because they're going to have to chop games so much. And let's face it, he's Mr. 27 outs anyway. Anyway, you can cut him, slice him, or dice him. So I don't know if our listeners were aware, but under the original rules this year, when you were going to start with 26 players, you were not going to be allowed to carry more than 13 pitchers. So it had to be 13 and 13. But now... he said he's going to carry more pitchers than hitters out of a 30-man, so it's at least going to be a 16-14 split. So they're going to have a lot of arms they're taking. This could be a whole lot of pitchers are going to make this team out of camp that ordinarily would not make the team.
Yeah, and that leads me into really my first sort of storyline that I wanted to follow. And we'll talk more about the rules and how they impact the Brewers in terms of gameplay, but this roster situation where you're going to start with 30 guys and sort of peel back as the season goes on seems to be in Craig Counsell's wheelhouse. We've talked about that at length, that how they've, the last couple Septembers has been their time to shine when rosters have expanded. And you've already talked to Craig Counsell. I'm sure part of him is relishing this opportunity because he's had success there. But on the other hand, I don't know how much luck is involved with what the Brewers have accomplished over the last couple Septembers. They have probably gotten as much out of their roster as they possibly could have. There's probably a little bit of extra pressure here on Craig Counsell to make this 60-game season, sort of his playpen and make it pull that same magic that they were able to do in 2019, 2018, and even 2017 to a degree. Do you get the sense that he is relishing this, that this is one grand experiment that has just got Craig Counsell's name written all over it? Or does he sort of surrender to the idea that 60-game sample is just so small, really anything can happen, and there's no real alchemy to what's going to happen here in this baseball season?
Craig Counsell's not one to surrender to too many things, JR.
That's true.
I would think we would put this in the relish tray, not in the surrender category. I would say he's going to relish this. So, he's looking forward to it. We've always called the 162-game marathon season a marathon, which it certainly is. And a lot of people have already started calling the 60-game season a sprint, the opposite of a marathon, a sprint. Craig, when we talked to Craig on a Zoom session, he cautioned against the sprint analogy. He said a marathon's 26 miles, a sprint's usually 100, meters. He says we're playing more over a third of a season, So it's not a sprint, compared to the actual percentages of 100 meters versus 26 miles. He goes, it's not a sprint. It's a shorter season, but it's not a sprint. And he said, we're certainly going to try to win every single game we play, as we always do. But he says, you cannot get caught up in thinking we got to just pull out all the stops right out of the chute and start sacrificing tomorrow's game to win today. He said 60 games is still, it'd be like, where do you stand? Well, David Stearns, the Brewers president of baseball operations, said he likened this to waking up on July 24th and you're tied with everybody for first place. And then you got 2 months to go, and so he goes, that does qualify, for the, getting close to the pennant race. But as counsel pointed out, it's still 60 games. So in other words, don't start pushing the panic button if you get off to a 2-4 start. Don't do it.
Yeah, and then in terms of who makes this roster, there's a couple guys that I think are like a Logan Morrison that I think was right on the fringe of making the 26-man roster out of camp and feels like there's a much stronger likelihood. I mean, he'll certainly be part of the 45-man crew, but the pretty good chance I think he's on that 30-man team that breaks camp. But part of the reason why there were so many there were still some question marks is because of injuries. And those
Right.
injury questions are pretty much sewn up. Luis Urias, Eric Lauer, and Corey Knebel, the three biggest examples. I mean, by all reports, these guys are fully ready to go. Everybody's
Yeah.
healthy, so it's a different shape than it was in March.
Yeah, I think Lauer and Urias will make the team now. Knebel's going to be the fascinating guy, JR, and this is why. He's coming off Tommy John surgery, and he's now about 13 or 14 months past it, right about where you're usually given the full go to rejoin your major league team. And actually, a little bit beyond that, he was expected to join the Brewers by the end of May. So, time-wise, he would be ready to join the Brewers. But part of that journey would have been a minor league rehab assignment, for a few weeks to get him in game shape before calling him up to the big leagues. Well, as previously noted, we don't have any minor leagues this year. And there won't be any minor. I don't think he's going to be sent on rehab to Camp Appleton. Who the heck is he going to be pitching against there,
Right.
Is a Northwoods League team going to show up on a bus one day?
Some of those teams don't have schedules yet, so why not? Let's get the Lakeshore Chinooks out there.
Boy, if you could, if they could sign a waiver that they're coronavirus free, they might.
Yeah, right.
But believe me, you ain't getting into the Bubble Boys bubble this year unless you got a really good pass. So,
Absolutely. Yeah.
it's not going to do any good to send them there. So, and then this might be part of the equation of Craig Counsell saying he's going to keep more pitchers. What they're probably going to do, and I'm going to predict this is what they're going to do, is put him on their active roster, but have the luxury of working him in, couple of batters at a time for a few games, and then eventually try to get him up to an inning. And that's all you really want out of a Corey Kniebel is be able to get three outs, you know what? So, but I bet you that's what they're going to do, because otherwise, how is he ever going to get ready to pitch this year if he doesn't pitch? Does that sound stupid to say? You got to pitch to be ready to pitch. And so now, having said that, I think they'll closely monitor him in this 3-week camp to make sure he looks okay. If he doesn't look okay, then they're certainly not going to keep him. But if he looks okay and he's throwing good in live BPs and whatever simulated action they want to give him, I'm guessing they're going to keep him now, And then he's just a plus to have, even if you get him, bring him in to get one batter out. But they would have to be just 100% sure that he's healthy and could not hurt himself. Corey he's a very competitive guy, and he only knows one speed. And so they would be careful with him. But I just, it would almost be demoralizing for him to be sent to Camp Appleton, So I think he makes the team if they judge him to be okay. He might start throwing some simulated stuff and get sore, and too sore to keep. Then they'd have to send him to Camp Appleton and hope he'd be ready to pitch at some other time. But to me, he's the most fascinating guy because he's coming off Tommy John. You know, Luis Urias had a hamate bone fracture. That's been healed long ago. Eric Lauer had a shoulder impingement. That's been healed long ago. Ray Black had a back issue. That's been healed long ago. But Corey's the guy that you can't really, you don't want to skip steps on. You know, he's come too far for that. He's got too valuable. But he's going to be a true wild card in camp.
Yeah, and it goes without saying, if this game, if the Brewers do operate the way they have the past couple Septembers, maybe for the whole 60 games, maybe for part of it, the bullpen is a big reason why. And Knebel's so huge in 2018 and so central to what they were doing, and you don't want a weapon like that sidelined for any reason. So,
well,
if they had
him last year, JR, they don't ask Josh Hader to get six outs in the wild card game in Washington.
You're right.
You know, they ask him to get three, and the last three probably. So he, because by then Jeremy Jeffers was gone as well. You know,
yeah,
their bullpen, their crunch time bullpen down the stretch last year was Brent Suter, Drew Pomerantz, and Josh Hader. You know, and
yes,
they've got two of those guys back, Suter and Hader, but they don't have Pomerantz. So they need some more people to fill in because they're going to be using the bullpen to cover more outs than ever out of the chute. And he wasn't ready to commit to, like, would they use six starters, you know, to even stretch out the staff even more. They've got six starters now at least to pick from with Lauer being back. You know, we know four starting pitchers are going to be Adrian Houser, Brandon Woodruff, Brett Anderson, and Josh Lindblom. We know those are four. Well, then it's either three into one or three into two if he would use six, because you have Corbin Burnes, Freddie Peralta, and Eric Lauer, who was out of the picture at the start, at the scheduled start of the regular season and at the end of March, but is now back in the picture. So he's got a good group of arms to pick from the start, and then he's going to fill in with a whole bunch of arms behind him.
Yeah, that leads exactly into what my next question was, the picture that we'll have with this rotation. You know, you talked about Pomerantz, Suter, Hader, all from the left side, and Lauer doesn't throw hard, isn't quite at that level necessarily. Of course, Suter doesn't throw hard necessarily either, but you could see Eric Lauer fitting in a bullpen capacity as a guy who could work multiple innings if need be. You could also see him being in the rotation. Freddie Peralta, you know, last century got a contract extension, you know, before the season here for 3 years. So the Brewers are really committed to him and really seem prepared to have him a part of the rotation. But it's also easy to forget how effective he was out of the bullpen, too. You know, you could see him being sort of that swing guy.
And you also wonder if the temptation to use him that way is way higher in a 60-game season than a 162-game season. You know?
That's exactly right. And Corbin Burnes is a huge wild card because he had such a terrible 2019 after such an effective 2018, and it's unclear what his role, where he's most comfortable. I know the Brewers would love to see him as a starting pitcher. It doesn't seem like there's innings for him in that capacity right now, but like you're saying, we could see a six-man rotation. I mean, there's nothing we know about baseball is the same here. So, like, every model could be blown up here. It's really hard to know what they're going to do with their starters.
Left-handers might be throwing right-handed this year. Everything else is different. I mean, we might cats sleeping with dogs. It's the old Ghostbusters, you know, world upside down, you know. So, yeah, I mean, and to me, that's why I know a lot of people are bummed out that it's only 60 games, and I understand why. But it has a chance to be 60 of the most fascinating games we've ever seen.
Totally.
because the rules are all changed now, too.
Yeah, I would bet that we see the four guys you mentioned, and I would bet to start with Peralta as your five, I guess, and then Lauer has a chance to start some games in there, too. But it seems so easy when Eric Lauer was injured. Like, okay, well, he'll, you know, miss the first few weeks of the season, and then he'll filter it, and they'll figure out what to do from there. Someone will get hurt, so you'll figure it out from there.
And also, hopefully, starting on July 24th, hopefully that's going to break the opening day pitcher jinx, because it just it won't seem like opening day.
Yeah, we'll see. That would be a nice that would be nice.
I mean, hasn't been a good story to come out of an opening day starter for about five, I think, since Giovanni Gallardo left.
Yeah, that would be about right. That would be about right. The Brewers have had some bad luck opening day starter wise, but you know, maybe they just get Alex Claudio to get the first three outs, and then go. They have a starter, or what did we call that?
An opener.
Yes, when Dan Jennings, or Wade Miley did that. Maybe that's what they elect to do, to skip out on that. Yeah. Start early.
Wouldn't that be great? Like, on top of every other crazy thing that we're expecting on opening day, they use an opener. That would just take the cake, wouldn't it?
It really would. And one of the rule changes, this leads into another thing I want to talk about, the way the rule changes impact this Milwaukee Brewers team. We did talk on the last podcast about the designated hitter, how we could see Ryan Braun filling that role, and others would be filling that role, and that this team is suited to using the designated hitter. But there's a lot of other rule changes as well. The roster, you know, makeup that we talked about is part of it. And also this rule that has nothing to do with COVID-19 that was already in place, that pitchers must face three batters at minimum before they can be taken out of a game. And that really impacts somebody like Alex Claudio, who did resign with the Brewers and has been a situational lefty. Go get the one left-hander out and get taken out of the game. The Brewers seem determined to think that he could still be a part of this roster, that it doesn't have to be just that role. But I got to think some of their roster decisions are going to be informed by how comfortable they are with guys being able to face three or more batters per appearance.
And what a weird time for that rule to come into play, when the Brewers might be opening the season with 16 or 17 pitchers.
No, it's crazy.
Really? Really? They got to face three guys? Come on, I got enough. I can bring in an army here, you know. So, yeah.
It does fit in with the schematic of making the game go faster, which is what the point was in the first place. But they're trying to get guys out of the stadium as quickly as they can. So that does make sense. No more pitching changes.
Yeah, they really do. You know, they've been battling pace of play for so many years, and never does everybody want to get a game going over, you know, in quick fashion than this year, because they've just determined, you know, don't get them into the ballpark and get them out of the ballpark and back into their bubble wherever they're living, and away from each other. So, and in that regard, boy, are we going to have... I actually hope all 60 games are tied after 9 innings this year. I really do. And you know why. Tell the listeners why, JR.
Well, because the game's going to... You'll get to see a runner at second base to open up the 10th inning. So the game presumably is going to end more quickly.
Right. I think forever, how many years they've been using it in the minors, I think the percentage is that the game is over... does not take more than one extra inning. I want to say 70% of the time.
Yeah, it's pretty rare that games go... We underestimate how rare it is to have extra inning games in the first place, but then the idea... They just don't go very long. You get an 18, a 17 inning game here and there, like maybe every other year, but for the most part, they're over by the 10th inning and certainly by the 11th, the vast majority of the time.
Yes, yes. And so they're going to put in a runner on second base with no outs. He's going to deem to have got there on an error, so that if he scores, he's not an earned run. As it was pointed out to me by Brent Sudo when I was asking about that, yeah, we're not going to get an earned run, but we're going to get a loss. You got to give the loss to the pitcher if they lose. So, I got giggles out of the rest of my media peers and Mr. Council on our Zoom session with him, when I asked him if, and this is exactly the way I phrased it, I said, Craig, will putting a runner on second base with no outs change your absolute abhorrence for bunting?
He loves talking about bunting.
And guess what the answer? Well, that's what he goes, you know what? He goes, we must be getting ready to play baseball, because we're back to talking about bunting again. I said, yeah, there's probably some people that think bunting will cure COVID. And so they think it cures everything else, because I do believe in the minor leagues, when they start a runner on second base and no outs and extra innings, I think the next guy bunts 11.5% of the time. I mean, and it's the minor leagues too. And then when they tell you bunt, you know. And then, because then you got a guy on third, and then just about anything is going to get him in, right? Except for a strikeout or a pop up. So that's the way it goes in the minors. Put a guy on second, next guy bunts him over, next guy gets him in with a sac fly. It also sets up the possibility of a team losing a perfect game, because you have a perfect game, 0-0. They put a runner on second base. A no hitter, not a perfect. A perfect game, right? Because
the guy sacrifices
him over, and then a sacrifice fly gets him in.
Right, and it's I believe an error for purposes of scoring to so allow a runner to second base.
Yeah, so it wouldn't. So, but it would be a no hitter though.
I think we can cross that bridge when we get to it. When we got a guy in a tie game, perfect game going into the 10th.
Well, why do I have the feeling like it's going to happen?
That's a totally good point.
Because everything else has happened this year. But so to get back to, boy, talk about digressing. Back to the bunting. Craig says, well, I'm still not going to ask the next guy to bunt if he's not a very good bunter. So that part's not going to change, you know. And he said we've talked about this plenty, Tom. We need to get past the general assumption that bunting has 100% success rate. It does not.
Oh, man, am I happy to be talking about stupid bunting conversations again, or the idea of a perfect game getting broken up by a rule shift. I love that we can do this right now, Tom.
I know. We're finally talking about crazy on-field stuff instead of crazy off-field stuff. We're still going to have a lot of that.
Yeah.
But you know what? And David Stearns and Craig Counsell had smiles on their faces when we were Zooming with them, because we were talking to them about baseball, you know? No more, you know, negotiating and this, you know, this toxic thing and this, you know, despicable proposal. And we were fine talking about baseball. These guys want to talk about baseball.
There is actually one thing I want to talk about that's sort of off field, not necessarily as what we've been talking about, but this trade deadline coming up at the end of August is also going to be one of the more fascinating things that happen in the baseball season. And again, I feel like I have to add the caveat. We think this is going to be a full baseball season. With COVID-19, you never know. But at the end of August...
Every conversation you and me have going forward, we're going to hope that we're doing it on the basis we're playing a 60-game season. You know what? If we, you know, none of us want to think that it's going to be stopped. So that will always be the white elephant in the room, that it might stop. But let's not ever talk about it.
Right. Yes. So the trade deadline is interesting to me, because if the Brewers don't get out of the gate quickly, and I think after baseball coming back, the idea of the Brewers struggling on the field is something people haven't quite processed or come to terms with. No one wants to think about that yet. If they don't, though, they are uniquely positioned to be a seller at the trade deadline more than they've been in past years, because they have so many guys on one-year contracts. I mean, in a way, they're equipped to handle this craziness, this pandemic, by virtue of not having a lot of long-term roster commitments.
And also making that even more doable is by design, almost all of them have at least a one-year club option. So you can tell a team you're trading a guy to, you can have him for a second year if you want, you know. So we want something better back, you know.
Exactly.
So, I mean, almost every single guy they signed was 1-1, and some 1-1-1. And that was by design, because they didn't want to have to replace 13 guys like they did last winter, again next winter, you know. Of course.
Right.
Of course, you didn't know when you did it that, you know, most of the season wasn't going to be played, you know. So, but still, yes, if they're looking bad on August 31, you know, David Stern's going to be placing a lot of phone calls and offering guys up, you know.
Yeah, and Ryan Braun might be at the top of that list. I mean, because the way his contract is structured, they could have him back for $15 million in 2021, but that's probably not going to happen. So
he's got a full no trade, though. So,
oh, yeah. Sorry about that. You're right. So that's almost certainly not going to happen. But a lot of these other guys that they've signed, the newcomers, are on, like you said, one-on-one deals. And I could see that happening. And at the same time, I don't think this Brewers team is going to be a buyer, given that you have a lot. I mean, this roster is outfitted with basically two completely different rosters, the left-handed roster and the right-handed roster. I mean, they have kind of a little of everything.
They might, so, you know, but they might, if they have one really specific need, they might be willing to buy a guy that is a free agent this winter, and they only got to pay him for that last month, you know what I mean? And then he's
coming. Oh, yeah.
You know, they might. I would not. I mean, now I know everything's different this year, especially with the money, you know, especially teams like the Brewers, who depend so much on attendance. They're going to lose more of their percentage of revenue than a lot of other teams are going to. So I know money's very tight, but if they can get a guy that they only have to pay for 1 month and they think it's going to make a huge difference, I think they would do it. This is a team that really, you know, likes to get to the playoffs. A Brewers team's never gone 3 years in a row, so they sure would like to do it. The funny thing about, you know, the final month this year, instead of going up in personnel, in which the Brewers have been so successful at in September, going 20-7 in September of 2018 and 19, they're going to be going backwards on the roster. They're going to start with 30, go down to 28, and when they get to September, just be down to 26, and then that's it.
You know?
So this is almost we hate the Brewers roster manipulation. You know, all right, Brewers, you guys have been so great in September with extra players. Here, play with 26. Let's see how you do. So
yeah, they're gonna have to front end it this time. They got to do it in reverse. July is their time to shine, and then they got to hold on for dear life.
Craig Council is gonna be so bored in September without all those extra players. He might take 1,000 piece puzzles into the dugout during games.
But like, you know, you bring up an interesting scenario, like a JT Realmuto, who, you know, unclear if he'll re-sign in Philadelphia. Maybe Omar Narvaez gets moved to DH and Realmuto is the Brewers for the last month of the season, knowing that he's going to go, you know, sign big in free agency, and they short up that position.
He's a very close friend of Christian Yelich.
Interesting. I think we can all dream on that, but
they are very close.
Interesting.
I mean, but let's face it, you're going to have teams out of the race on the other end that have players that you would like, you know. So I'll tell you one thing. If you're out of the race on August 31st, boy, did you have a stinky first month, you know?
Yeah, you lost like five, you know, you won like five games in July. I mean, it's really hard to be completely out of
in August, the season. In August.
Yeah, in August, sorry.
Yeah. So, it would have been great if they would have kept the trade July on July 31st. They would have had 7 days to assess their team.
It's crazy. All right, so I got two more storylines to follow. One, this. Both of them are kind of like a projection, something that I'm throwing out there. One relates to Keston Hira, and you talked about how the minor leaguers are losing a year of sort of development. The same is true for guys like Keston Hira. I think the Brewers, or at least I'm imagining, really wanted to see him take a step forward defensively as a second baseman this year. And now it's unclear if he's going to have the reps to really do that. For one thing, the Brewers have options at second base and could make Keston Hira a designated hitter if they wanted to. And for another, it's just 60 games. You know, he's not getting the full-fledged, you know, developmental year that I'm sure they would like. I have a weird suspicion. Suspicion might be too strong a word, but I think there's a chance Keston Hira could be this team's best hitter over 60 games, and that wouldn't mean that Christian Yelich struggles or anything. I've been led astray by the various projections, you know, the like Stratomatic and things, sort of trying to imagine this season that have had really good numbers for Keston Hira. But you know, if you only have him hitting and not in the field the whole time, I just think the sky could be the limit for him as a hitter. Maybe he is their MVP, kind of surprisingly, over 60 games. But at the same time, you also need development from him defensively. It's kind of an interesting season coming up for him.
Yeah, and they're just, you know, that's just the way it's going to be. You know, it's that some things are going to not happen in 2020 that you hoped would happen with lots of players. You know, there's lots of pitchers that they hope to get more innings than this too than they're going to get. So, but Keston Hira, you know, basically played half a season last year. And look at his numbers. I mean, this guy, you know, I said it many times last year. He's the best looking hitter I've seen come out of their system since Ryan Braun in 07. And that's high praise because Ryan Braun came and was Rookie of the Year. After missing the first month of that season too. So he had a 1 month mulligan on Troy Tulowitzki and still beat him for Rookie of the Year. So he, well, I mean, this is going to be interesting as heck. A hot hitter is going to have outrageous stats at the end of the year because he's going to not have to cover as many games to stay hot, you know? So will somebody bat 400 this year? There's a better chance than ever.
Yeah, there is. I doubt it. I mean, 60 games is still plenty. It's hard to get 400 over 60
plus,
games.
Plus, you're going to be seeing more pitching, more different arms every game than we've ever seen before because guys are not going to be coming in and throwing nine innings, you know? So,
right.
One of the reasons why hitters have been challenged in recent years is they just keep facing all. It seems like everybody that comes out of the bullpen's throwing 100 miles an hour, you know. So, and you also want, you know, any hitter that gets off to a slow start is going to have to really be counseled to not panic, you know, because he's going to say, "Oh my gosh, I'm just don't have enough time to get going now." So, there's going to be so many dynamics. You know, the small sample size police are going to be running amok.
Love that terminology.
Those are the police departments that need to be defunded.
Oh, Tom. Oh, no. Yeah, there's going to be a lot of that. I mean, just as an aside, how history remembers this season, and that's assuming we get back to normal after 2020, which is certainly no guarantee, but how history remembers this season is going to be fascinating. It's just,
many
60
books,
games is just
books.
Nothing.
Yeah, many books are coming out of this season. I've got like I've got like six planned already. You know,
you're gonna have to retire and just write baseball books for the rest of your life about the 2020
I
season.
I might be open to that. The book thing might be exaggerated, but we're gonna be talking about this forever.
Yep. You know? And I mean,
we're not gonna have the media access we want because of the coronavirus. But the subject matter is going to be extraordinary.
Yeah, and we've seen, you know, there are a lot of heroes in baseball that are small sample heroes because they got hot in the postseason. A guy like Jim Leyritz, Jeff Suppan, for that matter. I mean, there are guys who've had those moments. This is only a slight step above that. A 60-game regular season, that is not a tiny sample, but it's not a major sample. So you're going to have guys that are remembered forever for basically, like you said, getting hot for a couple months. That's all it's going to be.
Right. And everybody still should be pretty fresh when they get to postseason baseball, too. So postseason might be interesting, too.
Yeah. I'm going to take your cue from the perfect game scenario you threw out. Maybe this is the year because there's almost no chance of it. The Brewers haven't had a complete game since 2017, Jimmy Nelson. And I think they've only had five in the last decade or something. It's something outrageous. Maybe this is the year they get a no-hitter because there's just no reason why there should be 16 pitchers on a roster. Haven't had a complete game in forever. Maybe this is the year. Freddie Peralta threw one in the Stratomatic simulation. So maybe this is it.
It would be hilarious if they even had one complete game out of 60, you know.
Yeah, you're right.
Because they haven't been able to have one out of 162 for 2 years. So let's just say it's going to happen because what's not going to happen?
Yeah, exactly. Here's my last storyline to follow. I'm taking a cue from 1981, which is a time when we saw a shortened season, strike-shortened season. The Milwaukee Brewers made the playoffs for the first time in their franchise history that year. And the Cy Young and MVP, as many people know that year, was Raleigh Fingers. He had crazy numbers. Right. And it makes sense that a relief pitcher would be a guy considered for postseason hardware. Because who better than a small, you know, in a small sample, who thrives the most? It's the relief pitcher. So if a relief pitcher posts crazy numbers, they're going to be in contention for stuff like that. I don't think we're going to see a relief pitcher win a Cy Young Award again, except in circumstances like this one, where it's a really shortened season. I think Josh Hader, if he replicates the success he's had the last couple years, which of course is a crazy if, but like let's say he does, I think that's a Cy Young candidate, a very strong Cy Young candidate, because he's going to be used a lot in big spots, and every game basically is 2.5 wins at this point. I think I'm already ready to begin the early Cy Young campaign for one Josh Hader. How about you?
Well, it's not outrageous to think a relief pitcher is going to win Cy Young, because what's each starter going to get? 10 starts?
Yeah. Exactly. Almost guaranteed to be a relief pitcher, right?
Yeah, well, unless a guy goes 9-1 with a 0-20 ERA, every single starting pitcher's stats are going to not look good enough. You know what I mean?
Even Sabathia was around for more than 60 games when he pitched.
I know one thing. You know how people have gotten over one-loss records for Cy Youngs the last few years, which is why Jacob deGrom has a couple of them already. You're going to have to really get over one-loss records this year. Yeah, nobody's going to win totally more right. than 10 games, because that's almost the number of starts you're going to get.
Oh, if someone wins 10 games, sign that guy up for the Cy Young. I mean, I don't know how anybody gets to 10 wins. It's got to be, again, it would have to be a relief pitcher who's on the spot. Yeah. That's the only explanation.
Yeah, a relief pitcher who got maybe 30 appearances instead of 10, you know.
Yeah, maybe it's a middle reliever that wins this year. Maybe that's going to be.
It could just be anything.
Right.
It could be anything. We could, you know, the National League could have its first designated hitter be MVP.
You're darn right. It's going to be so weird. The Cy Young is almost not invalidated, but it's just what do you do?
It's
with
a
crap
shoot. I assume I'm a member of the BBWA. I assume we're still giving postseason awards out. I have heard no discussion otherwise, but man alive, I would, voting's just going to be the, let's just get darts and throw them against a dartboard, you know.
Again, I am very happy to be throwing them and not discussing labor disputes. So let's do it. Let's get crazy. Josh Hader for Cy Young in 2020. Before I let you go, anything I haven't touched on? Any other storylines that particularly interest you with this Brewers team?
No, I mean, we're going to have several more podcasts before we play real games. It's going to be interesting when the schedule comes out, just to see.
Yes.
I mean, we know who they're playing. They're going to play all the other teams in the division 10 times and then 20 games against the AL Central. But it's just going to be interesting to see. Like, are the Brewers opening at home or on the road? And, boy, are we going to have an interesting podcast before opening day, because it's going to be the weirdest opening day ever. No pomp or circumstance.
No, and I just want to see the city of Milwaukee at that point. Obviously, they're not going to allow tailgating in the parking lot the way they
would
normally.
They're going to have to bring in the National Guard and protect the parking lot.
I totally agree with you. Totally agree.
People are going to try to do it.
and I'm sure they'll keep people out of the parking lot, but there are going to be many pods of tailgaters all throughout this city, within view of Miller Park and otherwise, who are going to be trying to celebrate this game. I mean, you can't keep people from at least their backyards or their street corners or whatever. So that's going to happen. It's going to be an interesting environment.
And one other thing I'll just throw out there. If the coronavirus thing, particularly here in Milwaukee, gets to the level where they think they can put a small number of fans in, I can't wait to see that lottery. You know, I mean, if they say we're going to have 5,000 fans... Oh boy, the first come first serve nature, that could be amazing.
Yeah, that's going to be an interesting set of circumstances. In the meantime, I expect there to be players themselves in the stands, like next day's starting pitcher, you know, is going to be asked to just kind of keep distance.
Sure will. They're only going to let so many in the dugout, so the rest of them are going to sit in the stands around the dugout. And they'll be wearing masks.
Yes. But now, like, I'm trying to, you know, the Brewers have had some characters over the years. I could see the starting rotation, you know, sitting a few seats apart, holding up signs, you know, go Brewers, or random things, painting their chests even. Like, this, there's a lot of possibilities here in terms of...
I asked Craig Counsell on the Zoom, because we got to have some fun, don't we? I said, are you going to miss the heckling when you don't take your pitcher out after you've given up 5 runs? Are you going to miss that? He goes, we can just create a soundtrack and I'll just push the button myself.
Yeah, there's talk of cardboard cutout fans. There's talk of, you know, any number of ways. The NBA just announced that they're going to have new camera angles and mic'd up players. I mean, there's so many things.
Here's my suggestion on what to do at home. Instead of complete silence, put Euchre's play-by-play over the PA.
Yes, why not? Why not? There's no reason not to.
It'd be fantastic.
Yeah, you've got players cracking up during gameplay because Euchre's telling some story about his playing days. I could see that being a problem. You're distracting the players.
Well, the other day he said he went shopping with a mask And then he was told to leave because it was a catcher's mask.
Yes, I saw that. Very funny. Typical Euchre humor there. I we'll talk about this maybe on another podcast, but the broadcast could be very different because obviously there's no fans in the stands, but it doesn't sound like most visiting broadcast teams are going to travel. So yeah. You're going to have down the middle broadcasts that serve both markets. I mean, how weird will that be? Brian Anderson actually is probably as well equipped as anyone to do that because he has done so many national games and has worked Brewers games even with the national audience watching, but that's just going to be a very different experience.
Well, if BA and Rock start doing road games from their house, I'm going to go over to their house with a 12-pack and try to get them drunk during the game.
You might not have that much difficulty depending on the day. I don't know. I think Euchre would take you up on that. Euchre would hang with you for a few drinks.
So, yeah, well, as we get closer to the season, we'll talk about just the entire weird nature of broadcasting, radio, TV, and media. It's this stuff's going to be done differently than it's ever been done before.
I got to tell you, Tom, it is just very uplifting, edifying, whatever the word is, to just talk about regular old-fashioned baseball, even though it's not regular or old-fashioned. But the not talking about labor struggles is really, really nice, and hopefully the listeners enjoy that too, a little reprieve.
Yep, it's this is what we've all wanted. David Stearns made a very good point about a 60-game season because a lot of people seem like they're upset about it and aren't going to count it as real and have no interest in it, blah, blah, blah. This, that. He said every season is sacred no matter what the number of games is, and no baseball person wanted a dark year. No, none of them wanted a dark year. So let's hope everybody stays well. We get to July 24th and we start playing baseball.
Yeah, I saw an article, I think it was written by Yahoo on the NBA season saying, oh, you're right, this NBA season should have an asterisk. And then he went through like every season, maybe in history of the NBA championship, and listed mitigating circumstances that could have changed the course of history. An injury here or a team that, lost a random game. There's a lot of variables in every season. And you can always argue that, teams got a break here and there. Yeah. This season will be a big break, but it will be a season that that will be remembered as a championship season if it comes to conclusion. So
they're gonna still give out a World Series trophy. Somebody's going home with it.
Yep, that piece of hardware, as Rob Manfred once said.
Piece of metal. We called it a piece of metal. Yeah, that was not a good thing. It hasn't been, this really hasn't been his year. So
this is not been Rob Manfred's year. Hopefully now people are thinking about this stuff and not Rob Manfred. So
speaking about that piece of metal thing, at least the Houston Astros won't have to worry about being booed on the road. No fans.
Was that scandal just from this season? I feel like that might have been a previous year.
Oh, my God. That was like 75 years ago. Remember when we thought that was the worst thing ever in baseball?
Yeah, it feels pretty quaint now. Like,
it's not even in the top 10 worst things now.
No. It's been a wild few months. Thanks for joining me. It's Tom Hodricourt, Milwaukee Journal Sentinel beat writer covering the Milwaukee Brewers. Find everything he has at jsonline.com. He and Todd Rosiak will be, I think, among those on hand at Miller Park to cover some of these games when they get going here. And obviously we will talk again on the podcast in the next couple weeks as we ramp up toward baseball. Thanks for joining us, Tom.
Thanks, JR.
Find us on Stitcher, Spotify, or Apple Podcasts. You know what to do. Leave a rating and review. You can find me on Twitter at JR Radcliffe. Find him on Twitter at Hodricourt. Let us know what you think. Thanks for tuning in. We'll chat with you again next week. Bye-bye.